You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. Michigan's new political maps are historic. They're the first maps drawn by a citizens' redistricting commission and not our politicians. But that historic significance won't necessarily guarantee that they'll hold up in court. There are now at least two major legal challenges to those maps that could result in judges throwing them out and a frenzied effort to draw new maps on the back end. And that's exactly what has happened in a couple other states recently. Ohio and Alabama both saw their maps tossed out in court. In the first case, it was excessive gerrymandering that made the maps illegal. In the latter, it was the way the district lines diluted Black voting power, which is the subject of one of the cases here in Michigan. Now, neither Ohio nor Alabama has an independent redistricting commission. Their maps were drawn by partisan lawmakers the way ours used to be. But it still raises an important question. Could these rulings have implications for Michigan's redistricting map? Could this be a harbinger of what judges here might say about what the commission did? And if our maps get thrown out, what happens next? That's where we want to continue the conversation here on Detroit Today. And joining us to talk about it is Clara Hendrickson. She's a reporter with the Detroit Free Press and PolitiFact Michigan. Clara, welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
So just to recap and catch everyone up, what's going on right now with Michigan's political maps and how are they proceeding through, I guess, the court phase of the redraw?
So the Michigan Independent Citizens Redistricting Commission adopted new congressional and state legislative maps in late December. And those were adopted across party lines. You had Democrats, independents, and Republicans on the commission approving those final maps. And now we're sort of in the post-map adoption litigation phase of the redistricting process. There are currently two lawsuits against the commission's work. There's a lawsuit in the Michigan Supreme Court challenging the maps on the basis that the commission violated federal voting rights requirements. And then there's a federal challenge arguing that the population differences in the congressional maps are not legally justified. And it sounds like we're going to have another lawsuit on the way. The League of Women Voters of Michigan and some other groups this morning just announced that they are planning to sue the commission next week over the Michigan House map, arguing that it is unfair.
And if these proceedings succeed, if what the maps are overturned for any reason, I think a big question is, what happens then? When we changed the state constitution in 2018 to create this process, this independent commission process, rather than leaving it to politicians, there were a lot of processes that were put into place and requirements for the way in which maps can be drawn. If the maps get overturned, we will be staring filing deadlines in the face. And it seems like, according to the text of what we did in the Constitution and law, we wouldn't be able to come up with new maps in the allotted time. Has anyone talked about what that might look like?
I think you're right. I think we're staring down a bunch of different hypotheticals here, and there are a lot of unknowns. The Michigan Constitution is clear that if the commission's maps are found to have not met the mapping criteria as outlined in the state constitution, that the court should remand the plan back to the commission for it to be redrawn. But whether or not the commission would have to go through a similar process of having public hearings to receive input on those maps, that's kind of an unknown. And then, of course, as you mentioned, there is that April 19 filing deadline for congressional and state legislative candidates. So could the commission finish that work if it needs to go back to the drawing board before that deadline, I think is a big unanswered question as well.
Yeah. So let's talk about what's happening in Ohio and in Alabama. I have been following the news from both those states really closely because I'm fascinated by the whole redistricting process anyway. And I think it's unusual to see as many of these as we have so far. I mean, maps get thrown out sometimes. That happens. But for two of them to have happened so far, I don't know. It seems like maybe there are closer inspections, perhaps, I guess, going on of some of these claims and some of these maps. But let's start with what happened in those two states.
Right. So in Ohio, as you noted, the maps were thrown out by the Ohio Supreme Court on grounds that they had a disproportionate advantage for Republicans. And I think there are some notable differences between what happened there and what's happened in Michigan. Of course, in Ohio, you have Republican lawmakers still dominating the redistricting process. In Michigan, we had the commissioners coming together across party lines to draw the maps and adopt them. So the process was quite different. And I think arguably the outcome is different as well. I was taking a quick scan through some of the different scoring measures used to evaluate the maps. And Ohio's maps that were tossed out were way more favorable to Republicans than Michigan's maps are. And so I think the question is whether the commission didn't live up to the partisan fairness requirements here. I think that will be interesting to see how a court handles that, because it is a new requirement this time around in Michigan's redistricting cycle.
Yeah. Let's talk about Alabama, which I think may have more direct parallels, at least in theory, in legal theory, to what the claims are here in Michigan.
So I think that lawsuit is a bit different than what's happening in Michigan. So the Alabama court basically said that the congressional map likely violated the Voting Rights Act because those who had drawn the maps limited Black voters' influence by concentrating them excessively in a single district. And the court said, you have to create two congressional districts that are going to spread out Black voters and increase the number of opportunities for their political representation. In Michigan, we are seeing current and former Detroit lawmakers making the opposite argument against the commission's maps. They're contending that Black voters have been spread too thinly across the districts and that there aren't enough Black voters in those districts to provide an opportunity for them to elect their preferred candidates. Hmm.
So when we talk about the challenges here and what the likelihood is of their success, does it make it more difficult for these suits to succeed because the process was so different and because the process was so transparent? I mean, you've got a set of maps drawn by citizens out in the open. What's the distinction, perhaps, that judges might draw because of the way we did this, even though the outcomes have upset so many people?
I think that is an excellent question, and I honestly don't really know the answer to that. Whether the process and how things played out here is going to have any weight in court. I think what these lawsuits are really focused on is the outcome of that process. I mean, you could theoretically have an incredibly transparent redistricting process like the one that we had in Michigan, and you could see a map come out of that process that does not meet the criteria. And so I think that that is really what the lawsuits are focused on and what the courts are going to be focused on as well.
Hmm. I'm talking with Clara Hendrickson. She's a reporter at the Detroit Free Press and PolitiFact Michigan. We're talking about redistricting, the update that now includes two states that have seen their maps thrown out, one for excessive political gerrymandering, another for diluting Black voting power. There's a scramble on in both of those states to redraw the maps before people have to decide whether they're running and where they're running for elected offices in those states. The question is, what will happen to the maps that were produced here in Michigan for the first time by an independent citizens redistricting council? We want to hear from you during the conversation as well. What do you think of the maps that we have come up with here in Michigan? And do you agree with the people who are challenging these maps in court that they either disenfranchise too many Black voters or illegally break up committees, communities. There are a lot of people who have been talking about the ways in which their communities get kind of carved up in this process. The boundaries look really different than they did 10 years ago when politicians were still drawing the lines. What do you think of what we came up with, and what do you think should happen to it? Also, what do you make out of the news in Ohio and Alabama that those states' new political maps have been tossed out in court? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Facebook and Twitter, put comments there, and you can get be included in the conversation that way. Claire, I also want to talk about what's going on the past couple of days with the Redistricting Commission. On Wednesday, the general counsel for the commission resigned. I saw some chatter, I think last night, that that there was an exchange, an intense meeting of the commissioners. Is this coming unraveled now because of the challenges to the suit, or was this kind of building among the disagreements that people had while they were drawing the maps?
So, having watched hours and hours of commission meetings, I can say that there have definitely been tense moments throughout the redistricting process. Commissioners were clashing at points, disagreeing. There were allegations of commissioners being snarky to one another. All of that, you know, just sort of typical squabbling among members of a public body. But I don't think I had really seen anything like some of the tense exchanges that were dealt yesterday at the commission's meeting. There was a move by one of the Republican commissioners to censure the commission's chair. There were calls to, you know, shut that down and to not have that conversation out in the open. Those calls were rebuffed. The censure vote failed, but we saw, you know, some yelling. One of the commissioners became quite emotional. So it was uncomfortable and difficult to watch at points. And I think just is indicative of the kind of stress that the commission is under at this point, where it is staring down multiple lawsuits challenging its work.
Yeah. So these allegations of bullying, of yelling, a failed censure vote, does it tarnish, I guess, I feel like this commission has had kind of a glow around it for a little bit, where, you know, I mean, when this passed in 2018, we had no idea what it would look like. And it took 2 years to build it out. And then it took a long time last year, really, to figure out how this all should work. And every bump was cleared, and they got to agreement, if not harmony, on all of the maps. And I think, you know, for the last month, we've been thinking of this as a victory for the decision that was made in 2018. Not perfect, but perfect, you know, moving in the direction of perfect, reflecting very genuinely the sentiment of the voters who decided that they wanted to do it this way. This fighting now seems to pull back the curtain in a way that says, well, don't be so impressed. And I guess I'm not sure what we're to make of all of this.
Right. I think you're totally right that after the commission adopted maps, their work was sort of heralded as a huge victory for the anti-gerrymandering movement and an example of how randomly selected folks could work together to draw fair maps. And now I think that is being tested a little bit. And while other commissions across the country sort of unraveled and had all these sort of partisan fights, what we're seeing in Michigan's commission is more of a clash of personalities. And I think it can be hard for folks who are quite different to all have to come to the table and accomplish something as monumental as drawing new political boundaries. That is not an easy thing to do, and they had to do it under a time crunch. And of course, it was going to be kind of a tense process. I did speak to one commissioner, independent commissioner Anthony Eade, yesterday, and I think he provided some useful perspective that because of the transparency requirements, they're forced to have all of these uncomfortable conversations out in the open, and he urged people not to leave that meeting thinking that it was sort of the end of the world for the commission, that they actually got the job done. They adopted maps, and you know, it was just sort of a hard meeting, and that was it.
Yeah. So then I guess the question is, if the court says, look, you didn't do this according to the law, you didn't meet these standards, you got to redraw. What will these tensions look like when you add to the equation the urgency of having to redraw maps in what could be a very tight window? Will the commission be able to function with this kind of open air tension and fighting?
I don't know. I think if that does happen, we'll find out. I will say that the commission did take a very deliberate approach in its first round of mapping to try and get every commissioner to provide input on where the lines should be drawn. And there are times when commissioners would sort of skip a turn and say, I don't really feel like leading the mapping process. There was a sense that maybe some commissioners were more adept at the mapping than others and more willing to sort of take on that responsibility. So whether or not we sort of see that collaborative process that was quite slow, or if we will see one or two commissioners kind of dominate the redrawing process, I think that that'll be something that's interesting to watch as well.
Well, and if the maps are thrown out, it gives lift, I guess, to some of the commissioners who've had real criticisms of what they ended up with. I mean, these maps were adopted, but there were commissioners who said, look, I'm not comfortable with what we did. You know, one question I think that also is out there is whether, you know, there were many different approaches that were taken to all of this. Could you just pick up one of the other maps and say, well, this is the one we're going to use now? Or does the law really require a more deliberative process?
Right. I think one criticism that has been raised over and over again is that the commission had all of these different examples of maps that they could use, and they did use a lot of the community of interest maps as a sort of starting point, but they didn't really look at some of the statewide maps that were put on the table by various advocacy groups. And I think that that was mostly out of a desire to demonstrate that we were going to, you know, have complete control over the mapping process. We're not going to be influenced by any group that may be perceived as having a partisan interest. We're going to do the work ourselves. And I think some folks are frustrated that the commission didn't look at those maps as more of an example to inform their work, because people saw those maps as being better than what the commission put together.
Yeah. Before we end, I want to take a quick phone call here. Julie in Orchard Lake. Julie, go ahead. I've only got a couple minutes left.
All right. I just wanted to bring up the information that was recently discovered with some kind of a university study, that there was a significant undercount in the specific area that was looked at in Detroit of the Black population in this year's census. And the problems with this year's census, because it was, you know, so litigated by the Trump administration, and how that plays into redrawing these districts when I don't even know that the census is accurate.
Right. Julie, I don't think you're the only one who's questioning those census numbers. And the mayor of Detroit says, for instance, that there was a massive undercount. Clara, talk about the role that played in the process, but also what role that could play maybe in some of the legal deliberation and whether these maps stand up.
So my understanding is that the process for rectifying an undercount in the census is separate from what anything the redistricting commission can do. Mm-hmm. There are, of course, have been identified inaccuracies with the count, particularly in Detroit, which there was an undercount identified here. But the commission had to work with the census data, even if that data was not completely accurate. So the data is what the data is. And I think whether or not the census corrects any of that, and if that could have an implication on how the maps are drawn, again, I think that's sort of an unanswered question.
Okay. Clara Hendrickson, always great to have you here to talk about redistricting. The saga is not over. We got a lot of story ahead of us, but thanks for catching us up.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, that's going to do it for us this week. On Monday, we're going to talk about how the Joe Louis Greenway is going to affect Detroit neighborhoods and talk about how infrastructure can drive inequities and how it can help fix them. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk on Monday.